Parshas Emor. This parsha begins with a very, very special mitzvah about the Kohanim. Hashem told Moshe, speak to the Kohanim, the sons of Aharon, that they should be very careful never to become tamei, unclean, by touching a dead body. As you remember from last week's Parsha Kedoshim, how Hashem wants every single Jew to always keep himself pure and holy. Kedoshim tihiyu. But amongst all the Yidden, amongst all the tribes, the Shvatim, Hashem chose Shevet Levi, the Leviim, to be extra holy, more careful than anyone else, because they are the ones who are going to serve Hashem in the Mishkan and in the Beis HaMikdash. Why did Hashem choose Shevet Levi to serve him, rather than any other Shevet? Well, as you remember from Chumash Mais, that while the Yidden were Mitzrayim, there were some Yidden who bowed down to idols, were accepting Goyish customs on themselves, but the Leviim, those who were from Shevet Levi, had nothing to do with the bad things of Mitzrayim. They stayed away from the Mitzrayim. In fact, when Pare announced that all those who want to come to work for him should come, Shevet Levi stayed away. They were the tzaddikim who continued learning Torah. And during all those years that all the Yidden had to work so hard, being slaves for Pare and Mitzrayim, the Leviim continued learning Torah. And while many of the Yidden did not make a bris milah in Mitzrayim, the Leviim continued, even though it was very dangerous. So we see that the Leviim were always special. Also, in the Midbar, by the sin of the golden calf, the Leviim had nothing to do with it. They didn't give any gold at all to make the calf. That's why Hashem said, I'm going to choose the Shevet Levi, which are tzaddikim, to do my avoda in the Mishkan and Beis HaMikdash. And amongst Shevet Levi themselves, the Kohanim are the holiest. And that's why Hashem gave special laws, certain rules, dinim, that the Kohanim have to keep to be extra holy to be able to serve Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. And that's why Moshe said, you should not touch or carry a dead body. You can't even be under a roof where you know that there might be a dead body. Also, you may not go in a place that there might be a dead body buried in the ground, a cemetery, or somewhere else in a forest where there might have been some dead body buried over there. That's right. You're not allowed to walk over a grave or touch it. Now, there are some times when it is a mitzvah for a kohen to become tamei. And that is, if one of his very close relatives, that is, one of his seven closest relatives, passes away, then he may become tamei. That is, if his wife passes away, chas v'shalom, or his father or mother, or son or daughter, or brother, or his sister who was not yet married. It is only for these seven closest relatives that the Kohen may become tamei. And I want you to know that these dinim about a Kohen not becoming tamei to someone who's not his closest relative, these dinim apply also today, in our days, even though we don't have yet the Beis HaMikdash, yet a Kohen is not allowed to get himself tamei. Now the Torah tells us that this mitzvah of the Kohanim watching themselves not to become tamei is extra special, that they must watch even their little children who are not yet bar mitzvah, that they too should not become tamei. That's right. Even though by other mitzvahs you wait until the boy is 13 and then he must do the mitzvahs, but when it comes to tum'ah, when it comes to this very special mitzvah of the Kohanim keeping themselves clean, they must educate and train their little children that they should not become tamei. Now a Kohen Gadol, since he is much holier than all the Kohanim, he can't even become tamei to even one of his 7 closest relatives. That's right. Even if his father or mother passes away, chas v'shalom, he cannot go to bury them. He cannot become tamei. Instead, he may stay in the Beis HaMikdash and continue doing his avodah. Now, there is an exception where the Kohen, or even the Kohen Gadol, is not only allowed to become tamei to bury a yid, but even has a mitzvah to bury a yid. When is this? If he found a mace mitzvah, if he found a Jew lying on the road, and he calls out loud and he says, "I found a Jew who needs to be buried. Anyone who hears my call, please come and bury him." And he waits, and no one answers him. Then he has a mitzvah, even if he's a Kohen Gadol, to bury this yid. That's called meis mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to bury him. Our Chachamim explain, why is it that if a person touches a dead body, he becomes tamei? That is because when the time comes for a person to pass away, Hashem sends a certain angel called Malach HaMaves, and that angel comes and takes the neshama away from the person's body. As soon as this angel touches a Jew's body, the body becomes tamei because that angel touched it. And once the body becomes tamei, anyone else who's going to touch this body will also become tamei. But our Chachamim tell us that by some tzaddikim, since they were so great, Hashem didn't allow that malach to take away their neshama. Instead, Hashem himself took their neshamas back to the Shamayim. And since that malach did not touch the body of that tzaddik remains clean, does not become tamei, and anyone who touches it does not become tamei. In fact, our Chachamim even tell us the story of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. He was the one who wrote the Mishnah, who gathered all the Mishnayos from all the Chachamim together, and he made the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. Well, this Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who was also called Rabbeinu HaKadosh, our Holy Rebbe, after he passed away, one of the Chachamim called out and said, "Even Kohanim may bury Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, Rabbeinu HaKadosh." Why? Because since he was such a great tzaddik, that malach did not take his neshama away. Hashem himself took his neshama back, and therefore his body did not become tamei. Now, since the Kohanim are so holy, they serve Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash, so they have some extra laws that they have to keep more than all the other Yidden. That is, when it comes to look for a wife to get married, a Kohen may not marry certain women. For example, a divorced woman. If a Kohen marries one of the women that he's not allowed to marry, and she gives birth to a son, do you know what's going to happen to that son? He's going to be called Chalal, which means that he does not have the Kedusha like a Kohen. He is not even considered a Kohen and can't do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. And just like a Kohen Gadol may also not marry a divorced woman. And since the Kohen Gadol is much holier than the regular Kohen, he can't marry either a widow, an almana. That is a woman whose first husband died. And all of these dinim are also today that a Kohen is not allowed to marry any of these women that the Torah forbids. Yes, the Kohanim are so special, are so holy. In fact, the Torah tells us, V'kidashtoi, that we must honor the Kohanim. We have to show a lot of respect to them. For example, if you're all sitting by a special meal, by a seuda, you should serve the Kohen first. Comes to washing of the hands, let the Kohen wash his hands first. It comes to benching, the one who's going to lead the Birkas HaMazon after a meal, let the Kohen do it. When it comes to the reading of the Torah, who gets the first Aliyah, who is called to the Torah first? The Kohen. Only after the Kohen comes the Levi, and then comes the Israel. And this is all because the Kohanim are so special. Now, in order for a Kohen to be able to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, he has to have a very healthy and strong body. If a Kohen does not have a healthy body, that means if something is wrong with him, if Chas V'Shalim he has a mum, a mum means something wrong with the body, like a broken arm, a broken bone, or he's blind, chas v'shalom, on one eye, or he's limping, or anything else. In fact, our chachamim tell us that there is a list of 140 mumim, blemishes, that if a kohen has any of them, he cannot do the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. It does not mean he can't do anything at all in the Beis HaMikdash. There is something that he could do if he has a blemish. And that is, there was a special room that the Beis HaMikdash had where they kept the firewood for the Mizbeach. Now, in order to use wood for the Mizbeach, it was very important to make sure that there were no worms in it. You see, when the wood grows on the tree, the worms may crawl in and make some holes and live in those branches. So it was these Kohanim who had a blemish that were allowed to sit in that room and sort out and check out the branches, check every single branch to make sure that there were no worms at all. And then they put the good wood aside and used it for the Mizbeach. And I want you to know, the Torah says that these Kohanim, even though they have a blemish and they can't work in the Beis HaMikdash, bringing the Karbanis on the Mizbeach, yet they are allowed to eat Truma. That's the special portion of grains that the farmers give to the Kohen. They're also allowed to eat the portions of the meat of the Karbanis and other gifts that the Kohanim get. The only thing they're not allowed to do is to work in the Beis HaMikdash by the Mizbeach. Then the Torah goes on to tell us about the dinim of Truma. Who is allowed to eat Truma? We know that a Jewish farmer, after he gets his grains, after the things from his field are cut down, he must give a certain part of it to the Kohen. And that's called Truma. And because the Truma is so holy, There are special dinim about it. Who may eat it? The ones who may eat it are any kohen and his family. That is, if they are not tamei, if they are tahar, they are pure, then they are allowed to eat the truma. But if they are tamei, they have to wait until they become clean again. And no one else besides a kohen is allowed to eat the truma. The Torah tells us that if someone who is not a kohen, if he purposely eats truma, Hashem will punish him with death, chas v'shalom, because the truma is so holy. And now the Torah tells us, just like it told us about which kind of kohenim can serve in the Beis HaMikdash, the Torah will tell us what kind of animals can be used for karbanos. The Torah says that the animals must be perfect and complete. It may not have any mum, any blemish at all. If an animal has any kind of defect, a mum, then you cannot use it for a carbon. Why? Because when we want to bring a carbon to Hashem, we want to do it in the best possible way. We don't want to give an animal that's blind, even if it's only blind on one eye, or lame, or that has a tail that's too short, or animal that had a cut in its tongue or in its mouth. Or sometimes you have an animal that's trembling and shivering because it's very old or because it's sick. We don't want to bring those kind of animals to Hashem. You surely remember from Parshas Bereishis when Hevel brought sheep on the Mizbeach for Hashem. What kind did he bring? The Torah tells us he brought from the fattest, the best, the nicest. Because whatever we want to give to Hashem, we make sure to do it from the best. And not only do the animals have to be perfect, but whatever we bring to Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. For example, when we bring wine to be poured on the Mizbeach, the wine comes from a very special place in Eretz Yisrael that had the best wine. When someone brought a carbon mincha, so the oil had to be perfect, have a good smell and taste. Also, the flour that was used for the carbon mincha had to be from the best kind of flour. That's right. Whenever it comes to serve Hashem, we do it in the best possible way. And I'm sure that you can figure out what you can do today to show Hashem that you want to serve Him in the best way. That's right. You have a pair of tzitzis, a talis katan. Make sure that all the strings are complete. You're wearing a yarmulke. Make sure it's a nice, clean one that covers your head properly. Girls wear their tznias dikke, modest clothing. That's right, to be dressed the way the Torah wants them to dress. And the same thing is with the tefillin, the mezuzahs, the lulav and esrig, the matzahs for Pesach, the oil for the menorah, and so on and so forth. All the mitzvahs that we do, we should try to do it the best possible way, even if it means spending more money, but it's still worth it. Can anyone ever imagine a better way to spend their money than serving Hashem? Yes, this is the way we serve Hashem, by giving the best that we have to Him. And then Hashem loves us even more and blesses us with all good, both for our body and our neshama. Now that the Torah is telling us about the karbanos, the Torah tells us another din, that we may not slaughter a mother animal and its young, its child, on the same day. That means, if a person brought a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash to be slaughtered, he cannot have the child of this animal slaughtered too on that same day, but must wait for another day. And this mitzvah applies also in these days, even though we don't have the Beis HaMikdash yet. That a shechet is not allowed to shecht, is not allowed to slaughter both the mother and its child on the same day. The mother animal should be slaughtered on one day and its child on another day. And even though the reason for this is because Hashem has rachmanis, has mercy, and wants to teach us to have mercy by not slaughtering the mother and the child on the same day, yet that's not the reason why we do this mitzvah. We keep the mitzvah because it's a decree from Hashem. Just like all the mitzvahs of the Torah, even those that we understand why we are doing it, we're doing it just because Hashem said so. That's our main reason. And now we come to a very, very important mitzvah of the Torah. It's one of the most important mitzvahs. And that is, as the pasuk says, V'loy sechalelu es shem kodshi, you should not desecrate my holy name. V'nikdashti, rather I should be sanctified, b'seich b'nei Yisrael, among the Yidden. Ani Hashem mikadishechem, I am Hashem who makes you holy. What is this talking about? Well, this is about the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem and being careful never to make a Chilul Hashem. Chilul Hashem means when a person desecrates Hashem's name and shows that Hashem's name is Chas V'Shalom not so holy, and that you can even go against Hashem. That's called Chilul Hashem, desecrating the holy name of Hashem. And that is one of the worst averis of the Torah. Kiddush Hashem means to sanctify, to make Hashem's name holy, that everyone in the world should recognize how great is Hashem, that everyone listens to Him. Everyone listens to Hashem, even if it means to give up your own life. You'll give everything away for Hashem, because Hashem is so holy. And that is called Kiddush Hashem. And there are certain laws that the Torah tells us of how we do this mitzvah. Let's say, if Chas V'Shalom, a guy comes over to a Jew and says, do an avera, a sin, or else I'll kill you. Now, should the Yid allow himself to be killed and not do the avera? Well, the answer is that it depends what kind of avera. There are three averas that are the worst. Number one, murdering someone. Number two, serving idols, getchkes. Number three, marrying someone whom you're not allowed to marry. So if a guy wants to force a Jew to do one of these three averas, the Jew should rather allow himself to be killed and make a Kiddush Hashem than doing any of these three averas. But what if the guy wants him to do any other avera besides these three? Then the Jew does not have to give up his life. He's allowed to do the avera. Yes, when it comes to save the life of a Jew, we are allowed to do anything, even to do an avera to save the life of a Jew. And that's why he's allowed to do the avera to save his own life. Except for these three averas, murdering someone, or serving idols, or marrying someone that he's not allowed to. And if Chas V'Shalom, he did not give up his life for one of these three averis, then he makes a chilul Hashem. He's desecrating Hashem's name, showing that it's not worth it for him to give up his life for Hashem. Now, there are some times that a Jew should give up his life, even if it's talking about any avera in the Torah, not just those three big averas. And that is, if this is done in front of 10 Jews, if there are 10 Yidden or more watching this happen, how the guy wants to force him to do any avera of the Torah, like lighting a match on Shabbos, or eating something treif, any avera of the Torah, whatever it may be, and there are 10 or more Jews watching, then the Jew should rather allow himself to be killed rather than listening to the guy. Because if he listens to the guy, that will be a chilul Hashem. Instead, he should give his life and make a kiddush Hashem. The only time that he can do the avera to save his life is only if it's done privately, not in front of many Jews. But if it's in front of many Yidden, then he must make a kiddush Hashem. This is why we find throughout Jewish history that hundreds, thousands of Yidden were ready to give their lives. They would lie down and say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and give their lives away to Hashem, as long as not to desecrate Hashem's name. We know how many thousands and thousands of Yidden, even little children, gave their lives for Kiddush Hashem. Like in the times of the Crusaders, when they went through different countries in France, Germany, and they wanted to make the Jews worship idols, become Christians. And the Jews could have saved their lives just by becoming Christians. But the Yidden did not want to listen. Not even to make believe that they're listening. They would rather give their lives away to Hashem, making a Kiddush Hashem. The same thing happened in Spain, the same thing happened in Russia, and in many other places of the world. Yes, a Yid is ready to give everything he has away for Hashem, as long as he can stay close to Hashem and never, ever tear himself away. As we are taught in Chassidus, Ayid nit will und nit ken sein abgerissen von Göttlichkeit. A Jew neither wants nor is able to be torn away from Hashem. Now I want you to know that the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem and the avera of Chilul Hashem is something that we can find today too. Even though we don't have goyim standing over our heads and threatening us that we should not keep the mitzvahs. In fact, as we get closer to the time of Geula, we find more and more nations around the world allowing the Yidden to keep Torah and mitzvahs freely. And not only that, certain countries even help the Yidden. So where do we find the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem today? Well, that is very simple. The meaning of Kiddush Hashem is that everyone talks about the greatness and the holiness of Hashem. If you act in a good way, that the goyim around you, all the nations of the world see, that you're acting in such a polite and mannered way, then they will proclaim and say, how lucky are the Jewish people that they have a Torah that is from Hashem, and that they are Hashem's chosen people. And then they will praise Hashem. That is a Kiddush Hashem. And this is something that you can do very often. Let's say you're sitting in the subway or in a bus and you see an older person coming in, you get up to give your seat. Let's say you're walking right near a doorway and you see an older person wants to go in or out, and you right away walk over and pull the door open to make it easier for the person. Or let's say, for example, you opened up a candy as you were walking down the street and you have the wrapper in your hand. Instead of throwing it on the floor, on the ground, where the guy will notice and say, "That's not nice. Why don't you just throw it in the garbage pail?" Instead, you hold the wrapper until you come near a garbage pail and throw it away there. That is a Kiddush Hashem. The same thing is the way you walk in the street, the way you talk, the way you play. That's right. When the goyim watch you play with your friends and they see that you have a clean language, you don't fight chas v'shalom, you're pleasant with each other, you show avas Yisrael, that makes a true Kiddush Hashem. Then the goyim in the world will be proud of you and they will praise Hashem. Another example of Kiddush Hashem is, let's say you walked into a goyish store and you bought something that cost $5. You gave the storekeeper a $10 bill and he was supposed to give you change. How much change does he have to give you? $5. But what if by mistake he gave you back $6? That means he gave you an extra dollar. Now you have a choice, either walking out of the store and keeping the extra dollar and thinking, "I got an extra dollar from that guy," or telling the guy, "Excuse me, sir, you gave me extra change. You gave me a dollar more than you should. Here it is." Do you know what that's going to do? That's going to make such a big Kiddush Hashem. When you walk out of that store, the guy is going to hold that dollar in his hand and think, "Wow, look at these Jewish people. How honest they are. He could have walked away with my dollar and not said anything. Instead, he made sure to return it to me. What a special nation they are." And the guy will praise Hashem. And the same thing is for many other examples that I'm sure you can think of honesty, politeness, menschlichkeit, cleanliness, and so on and so forth, to make a good name for yourself and for Hashem. And now we come to a very special part of the parsha, where it's going to talk about the Yamim Tovim of the year, the very special happy holidays, Moyadim L'Simcha. The first thing that the Torah tells us about is Shabbos. Yes, Shabbos is also called Moyed, because the word Moyed means when you set aside a certain place or a certain time to do something. And Shabbos is set aside for every seventh day of the week. And that's why, before the Torah tells us about the Yomim Tovim, it tells us about Shabbos. Now, even though Shabbos is not like one of the Yomim Tovim, it's much holier. And that's why on Shabbos, we may not do any kind of melacha, any kind of work, no cooking, no baking, no turning on lights, no melachas at all. And on Yom Tov, there are certain melachas that we are allowed to do. There are two melachas, two kinds of work that a Yid is allowed to do on Yom Tov. He's allowed to cook. That means to cook food that he needs for Yom Tov. he's also allowed to carry outside. On Shabbos, we may not cook, we may not carry. That's why the Torah puts Shabbos right at the beginning of the Yomim Tovim, in order that we should remember that Shabbos and Yom Tov are different. Shabbos is, like it says in the Pasuk, Shabbos, Shabbosoin. It is a day which is completely for rest. Then, when it comes Yom Tov, we understand that Yom Tov is different. That on Yom Tov you are allowed to do certain melachai, certain kinds of work. It also teaches us, when you see Shabbos and Yom Tov near each other in the Torah, it's to tell us that whoever keeps Yom Tov, it's considered as if he kept Shabbos. And whoever Chas V'Shalom does not keep Yom Tov properly, it's as if he was Mechalel Shabbos, as if he desecrated Chas V'Shalom the Shabbos. And now the Torah begins telling us the Yomim Tovim of the year. The first Yom Tov is Pesach. Moshe told the Yidden, every year in the springtime, when it comes the first month of the Jewish months, which is Nisan, even though the beginning of the year is Tishrei, which is Rosh Hashanah, but when we count the months in the Torah, Nisan is called the first month. The second month is Iyar. And the third month is Sivan, and so on. Tishrei is called Chodesh HaShevi'i, the seventh month. So the Torah tells us that on the first month, which is Nisan, when it comes to the 14th day of the month, which is Erev Pesach, we should make the Korban Pesach. Everyone will come to the Beis HaMikdash and shecht, slaughter the Korban Pesach. And later at night, when it comes the 15th of Pesach, we eat the Korban Pesach together with matzah and maror at the Seder. In the time when there is no Beis HaMikdash, we still eat matzah and maror at the night of Pesach. It's also a mitzvah at the night of Pesach to tell the stories of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the great miracles and wonders that Hashem did for the Yidden when he took them out of Mitzrayim. During the days of Pesach, we're not allowed to have any chametz at all. And that is what the Torah tells us here in the Parsha about the Yom Tov of Pesach. It also tells us that on the first and last day of Yom Tov of Pesach, no work shall be done. What does it mean, no work? Besides cooking or carrying, no other melacha is allowed to be done. And the reason is, in order that the Yidden should rest on Yom Tov, they should enjoy the Yom Tov and have a lot of simcha. Also, if they would be allowed to do different kinds of malacha too, then the Jewish people would not spend their day learning Torah or talking about the wonders and miracles of that Yom Tov in order that we should learn a lesson from it. That's why no malacha besides cooking and carrying is allowed to be done on Yom Tov. Now, there is a difference between Eretz Yisrael and those who live in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, the first day of Yom Tov and the last day of Yom Tov, which is the seventh day, those are the only 2 days which are really Yom Tov. But the days in between are called Chol HaMoed, when you are allowed to do work that you must do. That means not only cooking or carrying, but you can drive a car, you can turn on lights, but you should not do the kind of malacha, such as writing, sewing, or different kinds of hard work, because it's still Yom Tov. True, it's called Chol HaMoed. It's the weekdays of Yom Tov. But still, our Chachamim say that on Chol HaMoed, we are allowed to do certain kinds of work. Those that must be done. Things which can wait till after Yom Tov, you must better wait. Also, we should eat good meals, seudos during Chol HaMoed. We should also dress up Yom Tov Tik, not just like the weekday clothes. We should dress up Yom Tov Tik during Chol HaMoed, because it is Yom Tov. Now, in Eretz Yisrael, they have 5 days Chol HaMoed, because the first day of Pesach is Yom Tov. The second day is no longer Yom Tov. It's Chol HaMoed. And then they count 5 days. And then the last day, which is the seventh day of Pesach, is again Yom Tov. But in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Eretz Yisrael, we have 2 days Yom Tov right at the beginning. The first day of Pesach and the second day. And those 2 days are exactly the same about what kind of malachos we are allowed to do or not. And then when it comes to the end of Pesach, the seventh day, Shvi'i Shel Pesach, well, in Chutz La'aretz, we're going to have 2 days of Yom Tov. We're going to have also an eighth day, which is called Acharon Shel Pesach, the last day of Pesach. You see, being out of Eretz Yisrael also has something good for us. Of course, not the fact that we are out of Eretz Yisrael. We would all love to be there. But we gain something, at least, because in everything that Hashem created in this world, even if it looks like it's not good, but there must be something good in it. So, the fact that we're out of Eretz Yisrael, we have something good, and that is that we get an extra day of Yom Tov, more than in Eretz Yisrael. We get Acharon Shel Pesach. That's the eighth day. So we end up having 2 days in the beginning of Yom Tov, 2 days at the end of Yom Tov, and 4 days in between that are Chol HaMoed. And then the Torah tells us about a very special thing that's done on the second day of Pesach. That is, on Tes Zion Nisan, the 16th day of Nisan. And that is the Karban HaOmer. Now, what is the Karban HaOmer? Well, as you know, farmers work very hard during the winter time to make sure that their fields are going to grow good grain, barley, wheat, and all other kinds of produce. Things that are going to grow out, later they're going to keep it for themselves or sell it to people. Now, a farmer knows that even though he worked so hard for so many months, yet, who is the one who gave the special bracha that the rain should come, that the grain should grow, and it should come out good and tasty? Of course, it is Hashem,